and welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I am Stephen Murphy, the host as always, and I'm joined by the regular rugby crew of Sam and Westy. And boys, it's Six Nations week. The best week of the year, some would say. I don't know about you guys, but yeah, Westy rocking the Irish rugby jersey. So is Sam, actually.
We're wearing matching jerseys.
Well, yeah, give me the heads up, guys. I'm embarrassed. I'll wear it next week for the review. But
I was going to wear my Wales jersey like a couple of weeks ago, but I decided against it.
You can't wear Wales jersey this week, Sam. Come on. But yeah, Six Nations back this week. We have two games on Saturday, starting off with Italy versus France, then England versus Scotland in the Calcutta Cup. And then Sunday, 3 o'clock kickoff, Wales versus Ireland in Cardiff. We'll start off with the Italy-France game because it is the first. Well, first of all, lads, how excited are you for Six Nations? Sam, big time of the year.
Yeah, it's huge. It's kind of weird because we had Six Nations like 2 months ago. We finished off the Six Nations and then we had the Autumn Nations, whatever it was called, League or Cup. So excited now to see what happens. But you're also kind of a bit like there's a bit of trepidation just about whether or not it's going to be the same without fans and crowds. Like rugby is great on TV and all, but you know, this behind closed door sport's getting a bit tiresome. Like I think New Zealand ruined it for the rest of the world when they had packed stadiums like months and months ago. So
hopefully it can
live up to it and it can be the same and stuff. But I think this behind closed door rugby hasn't been as good quality as the full stadium rugby. I don't know if that's something that will bleed into this tournament or not, but nah, you're always going to be excited for Six Nations time. Like it's such a good period of the year. Like,
yeah, the crowd obviously would help, but at the same time, I think Wes, I don't know about you. Do you agree? I like hearing the players kind of shouting and the, you know, when someone makes a big turnover, the big claps and I kind of like that. Do you?
Yeah, it's funny. You almost get a little bit of that, like kind of the benefits of being at the game live without there being a crowd there. You know, as you can hear them kind of shouting on the pitch. Like I'm surprised at how excited I've gotten for the Six Nations, to be honest. I wasn't really excited when the squads were announced, and now this week I'm going like, oh shit, it's back, get it? Like, oh, it's gonna be great.
I know. Well, I think it's because, you know, real life sucks right now, so anything positive is good. Well, I was a bit like the same, and then I saw today they released a photo of or a gif of Paul O'Connell shouting at a mall, and I was like, forget everything, we're gonna win the World Cup. We're winning the Six Nations. We'll even win Super Rugby, Aotearoa. I don't give a fuck. We're going to the moon with this shit. Love me some Paul O'Connell. So, but we'll get to the Ireland game. We'll leave that to the end because it's we'll probably have the most to talk about with that one. But Italy-France will kick us off. It's in Rome. Kind of some team news. Obviously, France, unfortunately, the team is injuries. To list off a few of the injuries, we've got Vakatawa, Gregory Aldrit, Roman Antomac, Thomas Ramos, and Camille Chat, the neck himself, all missing through injury, which is quite the list of players, Sam, isn't it?
Yeah, they're so stacked, though, that like I think that they'd definitely be able to field a team that can easily put 5-6 tries on that Italy, like on any Italy team. So like you'd be worried if it was a France-England match and they had that sort of level of injuries, you'd be like, oh, that could be a good one for England. But I think starting off against Italy, like that's kind of the one that every team really wants in the Six Nations, is your first match to be Italy, so that you can get that nice, easy kind of start, you know, without jinxing anything. Like Italy tend to be the ones that you're looking for your bonus points. So I think for France, it's kind of ideal that they have those injuries in a game like that against Italy. That's not going to be too difficult, but you know, there's still some big names missing as well. So you see how it goes.
Yeah, I think, Westy, the question is, you know, Haliburri coming in, probably going to start in replace of Antomac. What is your opinions kind of on Haliburri? Because we all know the upside, but there is, I think, the potential for a bit of a clanger also, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a potential. He's definitely not as consistent maybe as Roman Antomac. But I think the clangers were kind of maybe last year. And I think since then, Haliburri has been at a pretty high level. Now, the risk I would think is that if I was starting Haliburri, I'd maybe want Thomas Ramos in the squad to do the kicking. Not to say that maybe, like, let's say that he's a point-for-point better kicker than Haliburri, but it just means you have that backup and that if one thing isn't going well, you can say, right, concentrate on the back line, we'll have someone else take the kicks, which you're probably not going to have that in this case. But, no, I think Japan's going to run the game anyway, regardless of if it's Antomac or Haliburri. And France have already shown against England in the All Nations Cup final that they've got a depth. They've got a serious depth that nobody else can really compete with. I think I might be wrong, but I think Italy's last win in the Six Nations might have been against France.
I think it was in Rome, wasn't it?
Yeah, so my point is that there's always that room for Italy to get the edge. And like I said a lot, they were doing so much right for a lot of, like, that last year. But no, I think you have to count on the squad depth. And I think Halle Berry, I think he'll go well against Italy. Again, it's not the most pressured of games for him to start in. And I think a lot of the demons we saw in him are kind of a year old. I think he's a lot more composed now.
He's still very, very young as well, in terms of, like, those clangers exist in young out halves. Like, there's a lot of pressure on an out half. And what is he? He's 22 or 23 now. I think that, you know, those clangers will kind of start to become few and far between after a while. And like Westy said, you've got DuPont running it there, who is arguably the best player in the world at the moment. So, like, there's just, you know, you're not looking for too much from Charlie Bear. Like, I think DuPont was playing out half in the league the other day. So, like, they can kind of do what they want, really. But I think that, yeah, I think he has the potential for a clanger, but you'd really have to back them against Italy. Like, especially, you know, with a team that's got a few injuries, but they're still so, so stacked in depth. Like, they were just debuting players after player after player for the last, like, 4 or 5 years. It's just, they're so strong. And I think that, like, Italy, they, like Westy said, kind of countless times, they played well for 60 minutes, but they don't seem to be able to see out games. So even if they're in it, France will still fancy themselves.
Yeah, I'm expecting next week to play the soundbite of Westy saying, you know, 60 minutes, Italy were really in this game.
I hate saying it, but it's been true. I don't want to be a one trick. Like, that's the only thing I say on this podcast. But I watch them every week thinking, this is our week.
Yeah, it is. And I love supporting Italy because they do play some lovely stuff when it clicks, but in regards to their team, they've gone quite young. There's only 4 Italian players with more than 30 caps, so they're kind of going with the France of let's trust the youth and get it going. Is there any chance that you know the ignorance or the blissful ignorance of youth might help them this weekend, Sam?
Oh yeah, like you kind of Italy have gotten to such a habit of losing that those players might just not know how to do anything else. So bringing in new players that aren't in that kind of that unfortunate roundabout of going into a Six Nations with a little bit of confidence and losing and going into a Six Nations with a little bit of confidence and losing. But bringing in new, fresh blood, got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, a bit to prove, and not kind of hamstrung by the experiences of losing in the past might be a good thing. You really hope it is for the sake of Italy's future in the tournament. That's something I think in the next few weeks we will end up chatting about again, because we've chatted about it before and it's kind of always there. So, you know, if they do something now and this young crop of players change that tide, that'd be brilliant for the tournament, brilliant for Italy, but it could also be so disastrous and you're sending a bunch of lambs to the slaughter. Like, it's kind of 6-1. Like, it's an unfortunate, it could be win-win or it could be lose-lose. Like,
I think that's something Franco Smith's talked about that a bit in the media, I think, over the last year, and that it's about like they've almost bought into that idea now of, like, only been a 60-minute team, but they tend to panic in the last 20 minutes. They don't really believe they can see a game out. They think, shit, what do we do now? You know, how do we see this out? We're going to, you know, get caught in the hop, and obviously it ends up happening. So I think it's great that he's addressed that within the squad. And, it's, you know, again, I don't think you can write off Italy in Rome, really. They have been known to take scalps in the past, is my point.
Yeah, I know.
Are they going to this year? Probably not, but...
Well, with all the talks of stocks and, you know, GameStop going out, I've got a great stock tip, Westy. If you put €1 on Italy to win the Six Nations, you could win €500. Now, that is a great investment. Just saying. Do you know what I mean? Stocks.
If you manage to get a bookies that are kind of a bit flippant with their using of, like, writing down of dates and stuff, you might just get that, like, infinity bet where you put €1 on and it's just, if they at any point in the future win the Six Nations, you can cash it in.
It's still a big if, though, isn't it? Unfortunately for Italy.
Yeah. 2 years infinite. Now Georgia replace Italy and you're like, feck.
Yeah, if Georgia were in the competition, would they be more than 500-1 to win it?
Give them 20... I think they'd be more than 500-1 to win it, but give them 20 years in the competition of, like, building it up, and they might have a chance of being less than 500-1.
450-1.
That's the argument against Italy, like.
Yeah, exactly. But
Ireland would be the only fucking team to lose to them this year.
Well, it could be a blessing in disguise, but we'll get to that later on. I think we're all agreed in predictions for this. You know, pretty comfortable France win. Italy to be in thereabouts for 60 minutes and then maybe just fall off. But we'll see. We'll hold a soundbite till next week, Westy. Move on to the second game on Saturday, 4:45. We have England versus Scotland in Twickenham. England kind of team news. Again, a few injuries, especially in the front row. Kyle Sinclair and Mako Vinopolo are all unavailable. Ellis Genge is probably likely to start. And we also seen Launchbury, your boy Launch, Sam. And Joe Marler pull out of the squad, obviously, with COVID because they don't want to spend that much time away from... Well, I know that was Joe Marler. Was Launchbury the same? Doesn't want to spend that time away from his family due to the bubble?
I think so, yeah. I think it's the 6 weeks of being stuck in a bubble. I've heard reports from a few of the Irish players. I don't know how the English one matches up. The bubble sounds horrible. Like, you're rooming on your own. You're not allowed to converse with people in the hotel from your own team for more than 15 minutes for fear of becoming a close contact and having to isolate and stuff. So it's not like you're in a bubble, but you're still socializing. It's like, it's very strict. And if the English one's anything like that, and you've got a young family or anything, like, or even any sort of mental health issue, like that's something you don't want to go into. I know, one of the Italian players pulled out as well, as Materia pulled out as well. So like, you know, England have a few players kind of between injuries and pulling out. They're like, might be weak enough, or might not weak enough, but you could get at them.
Yeah, and fair play to those boys for recognising that and pulling themselves out of the squad, because that obviously probably isn't an easy decision. We all know Joe Marler from previous interviews, he's a big family man, so fair play to them. The new guys coming in on cap players, we have Odogwu from Wasps and Harry Randall from Bristol. They are the uncapped players. Do we expect them to feature on the game day squad, Westy?
I think Odogwu will. I think one of the reasons, I hear a lot of rumours, but one of the reasons they brought him in is I think one of his parents is Italian, so they really want to get him capped so he can't.
Okay.
Maybe not though. You know, maybe, I mean, I'm not saying he's not good enough. He's definitely good enough. But that's my point, is that they want to get him capped so that they have him going forward as he improves, which he will. Harry Randall, I think, is one of the informed players in the Premiership at the minute.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely a place where England can do some experimenting. Like, Eddie Jones is good at kind of picking on areas that he wants to focus on a team. I think in the last Six Nations, it really was their defence. They were really happy to let teams run at them and try and turn balls over. We saw how ecstatic Mauro Torje was stealing balls from Ireland. Like, I think a week in England disrupts things for about a week, and then I think they should be slotting in pretty well.
Yeah, well, Sam, what do you think? England, obviously not at full strength, but probably still strong enough.
Yeah, I think England are going to benefit from this being like a couple of the key players out for the first game, because I think that gives you the most lead up time to plan around that. Like, if key players go down mid tournament, and you have to make changes from a long term plan, or, you know, kind of parachute players in. I know they have a kind of a shadow squad going on. If you have to bring in players from that, that's when it starts to mess stuff up. But you're going in, like, they've had two weeks in a bubble now. They've been planning for this, so they will have known what they're kind of doing. So I don't think that they'll be too worried about the players that are missing, especially this week, really. Like, I think, you know, having watched Bristol a good few times, I think Harry Randall, I'd love to see him play, because he's a brilliant player. He's really, really exciting. Very strong runner and very strong player. So, you know, you see he's kind of a bright future ahead of him as well. And then Ellis Genge, I really like. I know some people don't like the kind of the salt of the earth attitude that he has, but I think it's really refreshing. I think he's a great kind of personality after games as well. So I'd like to see him playing a bit more as well. Like, I think while the opportunity's there, get him on the pitch.
You just like him because that one time he had a beer during an interview.
No, I've seen him in, he's in a documentary that I watched on Prime recently about black rugby players, and he speaks really well. And I think he's got a proper Bristolian attitude towards just about fame and stuff. And I think he's really down to earth. I really like everything that I've seen from him. I genuinely think that is very refreshing to see someone having a beer and being a bit more open. But didn't he call all the media sausages at some stage as well? No, I've got loads of time for anyone that calls the media sausages.
Yeah, I am always a fan of sports stars who actually give honest answers in interviews and actually just don't give the media trained bullshit. So I'm a fan of him for that alone. But England, yeah, look, they're probably going to be a well-oiled machine again. But Scotland team news, our boy Finn Russell is back, obviously, in Six Nations. No drinks limit this year. He can do whatever he wants. I'm obviously on the Scotland are better without Finn Russell train, the bandwagon that was so successful for so long. But here's a nice stat for his boys. You know, we rarely throw out stats on this podcast, but when we do, they're good ones. Scotland have not won the Calcutta Cup at Twickenham since 1983. That's when Westy was 15 years old. But
Sam's older than me. What are you picking on me for?
Because it annoys you more. It annoys you more.
I'm not still in my 20s.
Yeah, hanging on. But obviously the last trip there, the pretty good memories from that 38-38 classic draw game. So some positive memories going in, but obviously then, you know, they won't be fair, unless I should say that. Injury-wise, the only big issue really is at hooker, because the two top options in Fraser Brown and Stuart McInally are sidelined with neck injuries, and you don't really want to be going in with a weakened pack against England and their monster forward pack. So Westy, kind of with Finn Russell back, Scotland finishing fourth last year ahead of Wales. Scotland on the up, or is that just sort of media hype?
No, I think they are on the up. I think Gregor Townsend's done some good stuff. I think they're playing a really exciting, nice brand of rugby to watch. You know, you look at their last few results, you know, they beat Wales in Parky Scarlets. Again, this time last year, they should have beaten us if Stuart Hawke could hold on to a rugby ball. I don't think they're going to turn around and win the competition, but I think they'll be eyeing up third as a very successful campaign for themselves.
Yeah, Sam, what do you think? What's realistic for Scotland this year?
Realistically, like, I think that they themselves and Wales would be kind of eyeing up third. And I think it is there for any of the three of them, really. You don't know what Wales are going to turn up. And I know we're going to do our predictions later. But I think that they can realistically look at causing an upset. I think that they could get at us if we play the way most of us feel we might, which is, it's worrying kind of looking into the rest of the tournament. But I think that they're on the up. They've improved in the last while, and I think that they're going to want to ride that crest of wave and maybe take advantage of the fact that, you know, this year is so all over the place. Like, this could be the year of upsets. You're seeing it in other sports. You're seeing, like, a record number of away wins in leagues now because of the behind closed doors thing. All of these sort of things, there's so much uncertainty around this year that you know, Scotland could be looking to take advantage of that and maybe push into third, even sneak a second if one of France or England doesn't do too well. So,
yeah, we've seen England the last couple of games they've played, especially with the Ireland game, they don't run away with games. You know, they're trying to make you make mistakes and defend incredibly well, but they're not going to put up 40, 50 points, you know, maybe against Italy they will, but is that going to come back and bite them in the ass, Westy, by not maybe killing teams off earlier and, you know, maybe leaving it tighter than it should be in the last 10, 15 minutes?
There's always a potential. I mean, we talked about maybe, you know, Leinster not getting into third gear, and we kind of talked about the Crusaders and Super Rugby Aotearoa kind of holding off until they need to get that last win or last score to win. But no, I think England have been focused, as I said earlier, they've been focused on specific areas of their game to try and improve. And I think the last Six Nations campaign, it was their defence that they were working on. They wanted us to attack them because they were treating it like training for the World Cup. Like Eddie Jones has said, he wants them to be the best in every aspect of the game for 80 minutes. So I wouldn't be surprised if they turn around and play a slightly more attacking brand of rugby now. But other than that, like, I think they're pretty solid in the defence. I think their defence is pretty reliable. They might have got a bit of a scare against France in the All Nations Cup final. So that might kind of hopefully spur them on to try and play a bit more, or maybe use their a little bit more of contestable kicks rather than trying to kick the force errors, as I think they do at the minute.
Yeah, they're pretty heavy on that. Sam, can you give us some predictions then, this England-Scotland game?
I think England are going to get a bonus point win, to be honest. I like the look of Scotland. I like the kind of the development of Scotland. But like Westy said, Eddie Jones has been like dissecting the last year of rugby and using each tournament as an opportunity to try new things. Like, we saw everyone complaining about how much they kicked the last time, and then everyone complained about how much they let us play with the ball the time before. And like, I think that this Six Nations is going to be the one where Eddie Jones tries and just runs up scores and starts putting the foot on the throat and becoming ruthless. You know, not that they're not brilliant already, but that will be an area that they want to kind of improve on. So I think that England are going to try and be ruthless in this and really take it to them, and maybe put the fear kind of under France through big results elsewhere, kind of make everyone feel like, you know, there's times in the past when you've kind of gone into games against England just thinking like England are just unbeatable at the moment. They're just wiping the floor with everyone. And that's what I think Eddie Jones is going to do with this tournament. And that's kind of scary proposition because the vast amount of resources he has at his disposal.
Yeah. Westy, what do you think?
I'd love to see it go close. England and Twickenham, though, is always going to be a tough place to go for a win, crowd or no crowd. I think bonus point win to England. I think Scotland will be competitive in it. I think it could end up even being a one-score game or a 10-point game, but I think England will take that bonus point win. As Sam said, like they want to kill France's dreams early by taking bonus points, which is something that France aren't as good as England at doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think we're all in agreement England win. I think, yeah, more side with West. I think it's going to be closer than we think, just because maybe it's the first game of the tournament, slightly, you know, kind of stiff getting going, loosening up, but I think it'll be closer than we think. And you never know, Finn Russell could have one of his games.
Oh, I'd love to see it. Like, I'd love to see Finn Russell vindicated, running the show, just making fools out of everyone, putting in little banana grubber kicks through and everything. Like, that's what you want from a Finn Russell team.
I want to see Eddie Jones, like, storm down from his coaching box because he's so pissed off. That brings joy to my heart.
If you want to get a coach like Eddie Jones who's meticulous in his planning, like, you know how much effort he puts into, like, you know, scrumming against Georgia in training and running them into the ground before a tournament so that they're so tired that their fitness improves in the long run. You want to get a player like that, like a coach like that, sweating, is give them something unpredictable. And that's like a Finn Russell style player. If he starts being unpredictable and playing kind of to his ability, and, you know, I know he's benefited with having players outside him at Racing, but if you can do that against England and make them sweat and make them forget the game plan, that's how you get at them.
Yeah, plus we also don't know the biggest variable. How many drinks is he going to have the night before? Is it one? Is it a couple? Will he be a bit hazy the next day? No one knows.
And I've heard it's four, but he has an option for two. So he can take two. It's four every weekend. He can take two. He can borrow two from a weekend if he wants more.
Imagine
seeing him. He could have six.
Yeah.
If their bubble rules are like the Irish bubble rules, he won't be able to sit with any one person for more than 15 minutes. So there'll be no witnesses to how many he's actually drank.
I think Finn Russell will happily just sit in his own and drink beers. I don't think he needs company for some reason. But we're only messing, Finn. Can't relax. We'll move on to the Ireland-Wales game Sunday, obviously. We're all a bit nervous, I'm sure, a bit anxious about it. Irish team news, obviously, a couple of... Well, not really injuries. I think they're all expected to play, but we still have Sexton, who isn't fully fit. James Lowe was carrying an injury, but footage released. Obviously, Ulster came up and played them in a bit of a game. The footage being released, James Lowe was heavily strapped up in the leg, which is expected. And Tadhg Furlong, who played last week for Leinster, was it 40 minutes he played? A half.
Yeah.
So obviously he is healthy and ready to go, but... think there's a lot of trepidation, as we said in this podcast. Lots of great word. It's a great word. A lot of trepidation about this Irish team. A lot of us aren't happy with selection and possibly the style of play, that we don't know what's going to happen. We might be surprised. But we'll talk about Ulster coming up, first of all, and training with the team. A bit of a slap in the face, John Cooney. I don't know. Has anyone seen... Was he there?
He's in one of the Instagram videos. There's a ruck.
Is he? Okay.
There's a ruck and drill, and he's setting up the pillar. And I was like... definitely has eyes on the scrum half now.
Yeah, I wouldn't have blamed him for not going, because obviously I'm sure it's pretty embarrassing or, you know, annoying not to be there. But what do we think about that? I think that's a pretty good idea. I think we're all agreed that's a pretty good preparation to get up a team like Ulster who haven't played in a while and actually have a physical game rather than, you know, training scenarios. Sam, what did you think of that?
Yeah, I think it's very smart to do. Like I said, England, you know, famously had Georgia in their training camp to scrum against, which is those sort of things are brilliant, because you're not going to ever be able to recreate like match day situations if you're playing England amongst a squad. Like, who wants to be on the defensive side of things if you're in contention to start for an international team, potentially get injured? So you bring a team like Ulster down who have a couple of weeks off. They're actually playing very well. They're strong. They'd know the lads. They'd kind of, you know, some of them will also have eyes of, you know, potentially being called up and want to impress as well. So I think that's brilliant. In the past, secretly, Leinster players have been brought in to train against the Irish team because of, like, you know, for geography reasons, because they're right there. But I think busing down the Ulster team, it's a very positive step. And I don't know if it's happened too much in the past. Maybe it has. But the fact that it was kind of showcased on Instagram and Twitter, I think is a great thing. So, like, you know, if Ireland continue to do that, you're not going to get a better... training session and training competitively against players that, like John Cooney, will have a chip on their shoulder for not being there. They're going to want to impress, and they're going to want to showcase themselves. So you're going to get, you know, people on their game.
Do you think Cooney, like, every time Murray made a mistake, he was like, wanker? Do you think he's throwing that out every now and then? Or what do you think, Westy? What would you do if you were Cooney? Would you, like, play hard as you can and try and like show them up, or would you just be like, you know what, fuck you guys, I don't give a fuck?
The right thing to do is to go out there, play your heart out, and put on show your skills that the team aren't calling. What I would do is hit my opposite number late every single time until he lost the rag.
I'm all for being petty.
We know from the Cooney Casey sprint to the dressing room that Cooney is petty.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're probably doing kicking after training, and Cooney's getting a cone and going 5 yards behind them and kicking. This whole thing.
These are my warm up kicks, lads. These are my warm up kicks. I would agree, Wesley. I think I'd be a little bit petty. I think I'd be, you know, just a bit of a dick. I don't blame him.
He's blatantly been overlooked, even though he's the best scrum half in the country. Like.
Exactly. We'll move on from the Cooney stuff because we've spoken enough about that. But what are we thinking? Obviously, Sexton, you know, Air Sport put up a ridiculous... Well, it's not ridiculous because he will start, but it was just so... It was everything that was wrong with Ireland rugby at the moment. It was a Twitter poll, basically, who will back up Johnny Sexton. It wasn't who should start for Ireland or who will start. It was who should back up Johnny Sexton. And the kind of one of the options was Jack Carty, who's not even on the squad, which was laughable at that stage. And he actually won the poll. Jack Carty won it. So that says a lot about the Ireland kind of fans' mental state. But what are we thinking? Sexton, obviously not fully fit, carrying a knock. What are we expecting, Westy? Will he be on form? Will he be rusty? Will he last the full game or last 70 minutes?
Well, I was listening to an interview with him there this morning, and he said that he's participated fully in training. That's a very different thing to start. And he mentioned that he felt he had a strong game against Ulster, and then he had a bit of a niggle against Munster. Left out the fact that 2 weeks beforehand against Connacht, he also had to go off early injured. I think Wales away is a really tough fixture, regardless of what people want to say about their current form. Like, they are clearly trying to build to something, and like that could all click into place on Sunday and we could end up paying a price. But I'm not saying it's the time to take risks, but at this stage I think starting Sexton is more of a risk than anything else. Like, unless you have a very rigid thing where he's off at the 50th minute regardless, because other than that you're going to be taking him off because of injury.
Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd be worried starting him, although of the players available in the squad, obviously, you know, Jack Carty being left behind. I think he's probably, he's definitely the best, but I'd be worried about starting him. Like Westy said, you know, it's been for years, it's been a thing where teams have, like, they've tactically ran at Sexton for all sorts of things. Like, Connacht did it when they knew that they could get at him a couple of weeks ago and he went off injured. For years, number eights have ran towards him because he's had head issues and now he's got a hamstring issue. And Pivac, like, much as we want to say, like, you know, Andy Farrell's under pressure, Pivac is under so much pressure as that Welsh coach, and he's going to want to, like, lay down a marker and prove his worth and prove that he's supposed to be there. So they're going to want to come out and click. And if running at Sexton for the first 20 minutes is the way to do that and take him out of the game and then watch Ireland scramble for a plan B, that's what they'll do. So I think that, like, you know, Billy Burns is in fine form in the league this year, and I'd have him in to start and let Sexton recover properly, because I don't believe, and like, I'm not privy to his medical information, but I don't believe that he can go off injured as frequently as he has the last couple of weeks and as recently as he has and still be fit and available to play in a Six Nations game. Like, there's a difference between participating in a full training and starting in the Six Nations, especially against a team like Wales who are physical and who are going to want to prove a point because they've not had a good run of form. Pivac's going, he's doing this to save his job much as Andy Farrell is. So I think it'd be risky to risk Sexton at this point. You know, he's not a spring chicken. It's going to take more time to recover. Hamstring injuries are traditionally long-term injuries that take a good while to come back from. And he's tried to come back and gone back again. So, like, you know, play him at your own risk, I reckon. But I think that if he does play, he'll come off very early, be that tactically or be that through injury.
Yeah, I think we're saying it's risky to start him. He's 100% going to start. There's no doubt about that. Just because it's Ireland and that's how they roll. Look, he could have a good game. It depends as well. If the pack gets going, the pack on the front foot, he could have a pretty good game without really having to try. And then it looks like he had a great game, which is probably the worst scenario for Ireland if he comes off smelling of roses.
So as you said before, Smurf, it's not even about Sexton at this stage. Like, you know, we have, 20 odd games in the next World Cup.
Yeah.
Like, we really, like, and, you know, you look at something like Ross Byrne and Billy Burns, right? Ross Byrne has, I don't know, like 15 caps, but I don't know the statistics exactly, but I mean, how many of those were the last 5 minutes of a game? Like, you know, we need to we either need to, what I think the better thing to do is to start all three of them with equal time. So like one of them starts for Wales, one of them starts for Italy, one of them starts for France, or have like Sexton on a bench and start the other ones, because we know what Sexton can do. We know how good he is. Like we're kind of wasting time in the hope that he might be available for the next World Cup.
He can't, even if he is available, there's no way he's going to be the best 10 in Ireland in 3 years' time or 2 years' time, whatever the World Cup is. 2 years' time.
Look, I still think he has the potential. You know, he still has the moments of magic. As I say, I was listening to an interview with him saying he spoke very well. He's really honest. Like, he's really hard working. He's a fantastic player. But it's not, it's not even about how good he is right now. It's about preparing somebody else.
You're saying about preparing someone else. This tournament has just become so important for Ross Byrne, because the media, fueled by ex-Leinster players, is bigging up Harry Byrne to no end. And Ross Byrne's position as the backup to Sexton, both nationally and provincially, is suddenly coming under threat. This could be the last time that Ross Byrne is in a Six Nations squad, unless he really lays down a marker. Like Wesley said, he's only played 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. He needs to get his actual chance before he's written off, because if you were to listen to a lot of ex-players or a lot of pundits and media, Harry Byrne is going to be starting more regularly than Ross for Leinster, and therefore probably for Ireland. So I think that this is the opportunity now to see if Ross Byrne has it and see if he can step up to the plate and run it. Personally, I'd start Billy Burns because I think he's on great form and I prefer him as a player. But, you know, Ross Byrne has to be given his fair crack of the whip. He can't just be given England in a World Cup warm-up and 5 minutes of games. You know, this is his chance. And, you know, play him against Wales and see how he gets on. Like, that's an opportunity there. It's an opportunity to blood someone. It's an opportunity to get experience. There's so many times you listen to conversations about Sexton, and the caveat is you can't replace his experience. It's like, you can give someone else some experience and then they'll have the experience that you talk about being so precious. Like, it's such a double-edged sword. But
yeah, well, Ross Byrne is very, he's going to be, it looks like he could be the man in the middle, kind of stuck in limbo, because, yeah, he's in between Sexton retiring and then Harry Byrne kind of overtaking him. But like, all I'd say, well, I'll leave it on this. When Sexton's involved, it's all, everything surrounds him and everything is revolved around him. And that used to be okay when he was one of the best players in the world. He's not anymore. So it's now detrimental to Ireland when everything revolves around him. Because when it's not clicking, then everything kind of suffers for it. So I think if you got someone in else there, would say Billy Burns, and if you had a Cooney, but you don't have a Cooney, but if you had Billy Burns and even a Murray, kind of give him more of a role, let him snipe off, you know, rooks that he used to do that he doesn't do anymore. And I think all of that comes down to Sexton. I really think he's that much involved in everything that it has starting to hurt the international side rather than be a benefit. And that's why I think it's time to go. But we'll move on to Wales. Wales have not lost a championship home match to Ireland since 2013. PVAC is definitely hoping that continues. And I highlight one of the areas of Wales, very much like Ireland, the back row is loaded. Wales have the likes of Faletau, Aaron Wainwright, Justin Tipperick, and then fit again Josh Navidi, who I love, and now the returning Dan Lydiot as well. So absolute monsters, a bit like Ireland, spoiled for choice when it comes to back row. They had a rough year last year, Westy, and as we said before, Wayne Pivac coming out with a point to prove. They are going to be well up for this game on Sunday.
Yeah, I think all you have to do, you know, if you think this is going to be a walkover for Ireland, all you have to do is look back at 2019, where they won the Grand Slam against us in Millennium Stadium, and they were brilliant. They out-muscled us all over the park. They looked about 3 feet taller than we did at every moment of the game. Do you know, those Wales players can play well, and we did say under Gatland, like, I always thought Wales were greater than the sum of their parts. Something about some of these lads, like, I always thought, like, Sam Warburton, we played for Cardiff, I was like, oh yeah, he's all right. But when he played for Wales, it was a whole different story. Do they have those leaders in the squad at the moment? I think some of them are definitely, like, I think Alan Wynne-Jones is a fantastic man. As you say, Navidi has actually a wealth of experience. You don't really think of him as being one of the older heads in the squad, but he's been there for a while, and Justin Tipperick is world-class. So yeah, I think it's a very dangerous place to go, and I think it's a very dangerous way to start the competition, because we don't know how exactly they're going to come out. Hopefully they're still a little bit rusty. I mean, is this Wayne Pivac system going to click overnight? It certainly didn't with Scarlets. It did take them a couple of years to get there. So we might still catch them not quite where they need to be, but we need to be above average to beat them, and we need a little bit of luck as well, I think.
Yeah, Sam, as Wesley said, Wales still very much in a kind of a transitional phase. Is that going to help us come Sunday, or do you think enough time has elapsed where they're starting to piece it together?
It's hard to tell. We were in very similar situations last year with new coaches, but they were in a far newer system whereby like they were bringing in Pivac, who was out of the whole thing, whereas we brought in Farrell and brought a kind of promoted from within. Pivac did really well after a good while. Was it Scarlets, a couple of years? So that could happen the same with Wales. I know they packed in their defence coach less than a year into his 2-year contract. So it's so hard to tell what Wales is going to come out. I think whatever Wales it is, regardless of how successful Pivac is by the end of his Welsh management or his coaching career, I think that the Wales will see this tournament is going to be a lot stronger than the Wales we saw last tournament. I think that level of blip is not something that the Welsh players or fans or management will ever want to see again. I think that regardless of how successful he is as a coach, I think that this tournament will be a lot better than that, because I thought that they were kind of all over the place and no one seemed to know what was going on. So I think that they'll come out and they've got a good mix of experience and young players. Like I like your man, the Gloucester winger is Reece Samet. He looks exciting. So they're kind of throwing in a few players like that, and that'll be fun to watch. But with Ireland, I think it's Ireland's to win if Ireland play to their potential, but Wales could, like Westy said, any given year show up and be the best team in the tournament. They've had that in them. They've had the ability to play above their, or like play the collective, play it better than their individual parts. And I think that's still there. It's just so hard to kind of tell.
Yeah, I agree. We'll move on to predictions, boys, and we'll wrap it up. But Westy, what do you think? Ireland versus, or Wales versus Ireland?
I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to be hopeful. I'm going to say Ireland, but I'm going to call it, it's going to be tight. Ireland by plus 3 points.
Sam?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ireland by 8 points.
Oh, that's
just outside the bonus, losing bonus point.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this a lot, and it just has a frustrating day for Ireland written all over it, unfortunately. Because it's in Wales as well, I can almost see us losing to Wales and beating France the next week, like the following week. Like that sums up, I think, where Ireland are at the moment. So I think, unfortunately, I think Wales will beat us this weekend, just because I think we saw a few things from Wales last year where we saw the what Pivac was trying to do very close to actually happening. And I think maybe now it could start to, they might get the fruits of their labour. So I think they'll do enough to nick it for us, unfortunately. I hope I'm wrong, but I just, every time I think about it, the more I'm like, yeah, Wales was going to beat us. But hopefully I'm wrong. I'll happily be wrong next week. But all right, boys, we'll wrap it up there. Enjoy, everyone listening. Enjoy the first weekend of the Six Nations. We'll be back next week to recap it all and talk about, hopefully, me being wrong and the two boys being right when it comes to Ireland, and Finn Russell having a fucking cracker of a game. Cheers, boys. Appreciate it as always. And we'll chat to you next week.
Bye.
See ya.